Hi, Mets fans. Welcome back to Amazing Avenue Audio, the show. My name is Brian. With me, as always, is Chris. And Chris, we are coming off of two Mets series where they went two out of three in each one against the Texas Rangers and the Cincinnati Reds, two teams that are not very good, especially with the Reds. And while I think you and I had both hoped for maybe a series sweep somewhere in here, this certainly isn't the worst way to come out of a two-game series with teams you should have beat, which is to beat them four of the six times you played them.
Yeah. Yeah, I know that it lines up very well with what we were talking about last week. They'd still have to win three out of four from the Marlins, but they do have the opportunity to make this a 7-3 stretch, and that would be just fine. That would be great, really. Obviously, you want to beat up on these teams more than they did so far, but it's kind of been the formula for the Mets' success this year, just winning series. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they've lost a couple along the way. But I'd like to consider the four games against the Astros just one series loss. but it works. It was a little frustrating to have Max Scherzer be dominant and the Mets not score a single run against the Reds in the middle game of that series. But in the end, they still scored 15 runs across three games. And last night's game was dramatic in the timing of that scoring, but it happened. They did do it. So I'm kind of hoping that that extra inning last night sort of washed away whatever may have been collectively going on in terms of their offensive struggles of late.
Yeah. You know, the frustrating part of all of this is that this week, the Braves are playing the Cardinals, who are a pretty good team. And so far, the Braves have won three of four. The fourth game is tonight. And so the Mets' lead over the Braves is down to, I believe, its lowest. I mean, not since opening day, but since pretty damn close to that, 2.5 games. And with the Braves coming into town next weekend and them playing the Nationals, and the Nationals playing the Braves in between, it seems like this might be pretty tight when the Braves come to town. That's the only thing I could say that really is more than just a circumstantial bummer. You know, yes, the Scherzer start, you want to win the starts that your best pitcher is out there pitching. You want to win games that your pitching keeps you in, and the Reds aren't very good. So that loss stings a little bit, but like I said, the bigger issue here is that the Braves have not really cooled off yet. I mean, they're not on the sort of torrid streak that they were on before, but you know they are doing quite well still right now. They have won three straight. They took two of three from the Reds over the weekend, and so while the Mets have a 2.5 game lead, that seems likely to maybe shrink or stay where it is until after the series with the Braves next Thursday, I guess.
Yeah, no, it's but hey, it's something to look forward to, really. I think even if it is tighter than it is right now, I don't know. I'm sure a chunk of Mets fans are going to be dreading that series, but we already know that Chris Bassitt should be back during the Marlins series. And Max Scherzer, we will pitch the Monday game to start the series against the Braves. That is the Mets' current plan. Mm-hmm. Absolutely a good idea to, you know, their approach, get him two more starts before the All-Star game. Hell yeah, I got him one against the Braves.
Like, yes, absolutely. The only downside of that plan is I believe the current rotation figures have Trevor Williams pitch the Wednesday game.
Possibly, yeah. I mean, they could maybe figure out a way to avoid that.
And again, Trevor Williams has not been
Well, if Bassett pitches on Friday night, he could be on regular rest for the Wednesday afternoon game.
Oh, that's true. Okay, so maybe that's the plan then.
Yeah, we'll see. But overall, I'm looking forward to it, right? There's been a lot of reminding people that the Mets are in first place, reminding people that the Mets, for a very long time, held the best record in the National League. I believe they're a game and a half behind the Dodgers now for that particular title.
I believe so, yes.
But there's been a lot of hand-wringing over the Braves and all that, and my original point was going to be just I expect a chunk of Mets fans to go into that series in Atlanta expecting doom and gloom and giving up the division lead and all that. But I look forward to it. Those are the types of games that you, that you really get excited for in a regular season. And it's an opportunity to go in there and either preserve or extend the division lead, which hopefully they still have come Monday morning. And that's fun. These teams have not played each other much. I think they have 15 games left against each other.
It's something like that. It's something crazy like that, yes.
The rest of the way. Yeah, there's this series. There's the five-game series, the first weekend of August. The Mets are back in Atlanta later that month. And then I'll say this. If the Mets could maybe do us a favor and wrap up the division before the very late in the season, three games in Atlanta, that yes. would be nice.
Yes.
That's the only one that I look at. And I'm like, I don't know if I could be optimistic going into that one.
Well, you know, it's just I am perhaps slightly less optimistic about this week coming up than you are, only because it seems to me like, yes, the Mets had a big inning last night, but I'm just worried about the general offensive production of this team as it currently stands, because there's just some craziness with how few, like, I don't understand, I guess, the JD Davis of it all. Like, JD has just been so rough to watch in the batter's box right now, and we all know that he doesn't really have a natural position on the field, and so trotting JD out there has just been really, really tough to watch over the last few days. And, well, I know you can't put all the team's hitting failures on Davis. It seems like the person who you have as the DH should, in some way, be one of your more consistent hitters, because that's all they have to worry about. And so I am worried about the offense for the Mets more than I am the pitching right now, even though the bullpen clearly has something going on.
Yeah, I get it. I think DH is something they'll have to figure out unless Davis or Dom Smith gets really in a groove over the next few weeks. And they both do have some history of hitting well. Whether or not that was totally dependent on the baseball itself at the time.
Right.
But I don't know. I mean, sometimes guys will just get better or just get worse, and there's no real explanation for it. That is a thing that happens in baseball. But the overall lineup, I'm still not too worried. I think the sort of like the six guys who make up usually the first six spots in the batting order, Alonzo McNeil, Nemo Marte, Canna, and Lindor. That's in WRC plus order, not the batting order, but that group, just a really solid group of major league hitters. And I think there's only so long you can go before collectively, if they have it going, and if the Mets add someone, or if the Mets can figure out DH, That's going to be a tough lineup to face. And without going too far into the minor league side of things, who knows? Maybe it is Francisco Alvarez who gets that shot later in the season, even though having seen him a couple times and not being a scout, but just having seen him play, I do not think we should talk about him like he can't catch, because he can. But if that initial path into getting some major league at bats is in the DH spot, it would sure be fun to watch. You know, right. He's 20 years old. You don't want to count on him and say, this is our only plan. But just adding that little bit of extra power that the Mets, it's funny. Like, they're overall, all these guys, and Luis Guillorme, to his credit, he's in there with those other six. They're all like well above league average as hitters. But aside from Alonso and Lindor, nobody else is in double-digit home runs yet. Starling Marte is 9, so he's almost there. But just one more really threatening bat would be nice. And look, crazier things have happened in baseball. It could be Davis that figures that out and turns right. into somebody who gives you another power option in the lineup. But yeah, I will say that their production over the last couple of weeks is probably a bit lower than I had maybe realized. But at the same time, I don't know. I'm okay with that group, and I think it should be possible, whether via trade or the minors or both, to give a little bit of a jump start to the designated hitter.
Yeah, and Alvarez is a really interesting option there, because I would think that, you know, it's a double-edged sword, right? On one hand, you want to give him as many catching reps in the minors as possible to see if him as a catcher is something that needs to either be worked on or sort of go away. We have to get as much evidence as possible to put that into action, right? With that plan to action, to say, okay, if he's a catcher, he's a DH, whatever his plan is, let's get that going. On the other hand, I would think that catching in the minors is not all that different from catching in the majors in terms of the sort of mechanics of it and the skill level. You're catching, it makes a catcher's job easier if a pitcher can hit his target with more ease. So I don't think that necessarily he's going to get, I don't think it's going to be a big talent jump from catching in the minors to catching in the majors in terms of what is being delivered to him as the catcher. But from a hitting standpoint, it is a world of difference hitting against major leaguers versus hitting against double A, which is the majority of where he's played so far. So I think if you want to test him, testing him at the major league level, you can work him in as a pinch hitter, as a DH a couple days a week. That will give you a better sense of his hitting than you'd get from keeping him in the minors. And it seems like nobody is really worried about his hitting in the minors either.
Yeah, no. And I do think, again, just my opinion, but I think he'll be totally fine as a catcher. Mm-hmm. The way I was describing it the other day, I think it was just, there's no red flags in the defensive game for me.
Okay.
So, I don't know. I have to sneeze, so I'm going to mute my microphone for a second.
Okay. while Chris is sneezing, I will also remind everybody that I think us talking about Alvarez coming up is a bit of a positive thing for Mets fans. It was one of those situations where I don't believe we had ever really, I don't think most people thought this would be the year that Alvarez would be called up. I thought everybody thought maybe next season would be that year. So he's performing well enough for us to be having this conversation, which is ultimately a good thing. Chris, have you sneezed yet?
Yeah. I'm unmuted. And yeah, it would be a luxury to potentially get to watch that. And obviously what he's done at the plate has been really, really good. I do think if people have read about him, they've probably read it already, but it's just power to all fields, fairly easy power, in my opinion. There is one component to his offensive game where every once in a while he'll swing at like a 55-foot pitch. It's a little weird because he seems to have a pretty good eye overall. You know, you look at his on-base percentage is a good amount above his batting average in the minors. He doesn't look like a guy who's swinging at everything that's out of the strike zone or swinging at just everything overall. But seeing that happen a couple of times, I know other people who have watched him even more have also seen it happen. I did have a slight theory on that. In my experience, he did it late in games in Binghamton, and minor league ballpark lighting is not major league ballpark lighting.
Right.
So I don't know I don't want to make a definite conclusion out of just a, you know, small number of games, but maybe there's just something to that. Harder time picking up pitches once it's really dark out, or differentiating that pitch that's not making it to the plate. And sort of ironically, I don't know too many major league pitchers who will be like, oh, hey, I hear this kid will swing at balls in the dirt and then throw balls in the dirt on purpose.
Fair.
So to your same point that, okay, the quality of pitching goes up, but you probably don't get any as nearly as many 55 to 59 foot bounced pitches in the majors as you do in Double A.
Yeah. And also late in games, you know, he may just also be feeling
tired
or tired, or there's lots of things that I think late. I think that's actually an interesting data point to discuss, because I think there are a lot of potential reasons why that could be the case.
I'm Shireen Ghaffari.
And I'm Alex Heath. We're hosting Land of the Giants, a podcast about the biggest tech companies of our time. This season, Meta, formerly known as Facebook. It's a company in a particularly controversial and vulnerable moment. Mark Zuckerberg is placing a multi-billion dollar bet towards an imagined metaverse future. Meanwhile, the rest of us are still grappling with what he's already built.
This season, we're going to talk to the executives steering Meta's biggest decisions. And you'll hear from some of Meta's sharpest critics, its former employees.
We'll explore why Zuckerberg is taking the company in a bold direction and how Facebook's past will inform its future.
Land of the Giants, the Facebook Meta disruption. From Recode, The Verge, and the Vox Media Podcast Network. This season is sponsored by Klaviyo.
Subscribe for free wherever you listen and get our first episode on Wednesday, July 13th.
I'm David Pierce, and I want to tell you about The Vergecast, the flagship podcast of Sentient AI. No, I'm kidding. The Vergecast is a show from The Verge where we talk about what's going on in tech. The big stories, the best gadgets, the worst gadgets, and basically all the ways tech might change your life in the future. Neelai Patel and Alex Kranz are my co-hosts, but they're apparently too important and too busy to be here recording this promo with me.
Sorry, the editor-in-chief.
You got this, David.
On Wednesdays, the Vergecast crew dive deep into the stories The Verge covers, from what's happening at the latest Apple event...
I am standing in the spaceship at Apple.
...to whether you should be taking phone calls from your earbuds at really loud coffee shops...
Are you hearing me clearly?
No.
No?
...to why it's so hard for the internet to just tell you what restaurant to go to.
It is not a straightforward solution.
Then on Fridays, Neelai, Alex, and I spend some time hanging out and making sense of all of the biggest tech news of the week. I hope you'll come listen and hang out with us. Again, that's The Vergecast, like Verge and podcast put together. You get it. The Vergecast. See you there.
On the sort of promotion of a minor leaguer train, our friend Lucas Vlahos, who writes for Mason Avenue, is saying that we should promote Travis Blankenhorn right now to be the DH.
Yeah, I mean, the dude's been on fire, and Lucas might be right. Like, it's not like power wasn't in his game before.
Right.
Given what they've gotten out of DH so far this year, and the fact that probably nobody's going to trade anybody over the next couple of weeks. So you get the occasional early July trade, but with the new playoff format, I have a feeling it's really going to come down to the deadline where...
just picking over the bones of the damned, essentially?
Yeah, yeah. But those teams can kind of hold out on the contenders a little bit more, I think, because there are more of them. with the expanded playoff format. But yeah, you look at Blankenhorn and sure, why the hell not? Even last year, granted, his overall line in a very small number of plate appearances for the Mets, the overall line was not good. But there's a little power there. So why not try to tap into it?
Yeah, I mean, it seems to me like
something out of that hot streak, you know?
Yeah, I don't really see the harm in that at this point. I guess part of the harm would be that there really isn't a logical guy to send down right now, I suppose. Maybe you can send down Ender Inciarte.
Yeah, I don't know if he has options. Who cares, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, it would be nice to keep him in the system, but if you don't, that's not the end of the world. We know Dom Smith can be sent down again if need be. And while Dom hasn't looked, you know, ghastly, he certainly hasn't done anything with anything to say like, oh no, you can't demote Dominic Smith right now.
Right. Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. And again, he's such a likable player, but at a certain point, it's you got to hit to keep that roster spot, especially when they have a first baseman in Pete Alonso. And I don't even think there's that big of a difference defensively between the two of them. And at one point, that was thought to be the case.
But, right.
Yeah, not so much now. So Inciarte could go. Dom could go. I'm trying to think if there's anybody else on the hitting side.
What's going to compound this is that when Bassett comes back, they're going to have to send a reliever down. And like, because Trevor Williams is out of options, so he's likely going to be on the roster the entire season. At least I would think he would be. So they're right. So Williams will slot into that reliever role when Bassett comes up. So they're going to have to send down a reliever. So we're getting to a point here where roster crunch is going to become a bigger issue, especially when DeGrom is on his way back and when McGill is on his way back.
Right. Yeah. Adonis Medina definitely did everything he could last night to keep himself on this roster.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
He may still be the roster casualty, but you know, they could send Colin Holderman down. Mm-hmm. I'd imagine everybody else in the bullpen is pretty safe. Hunter, Rodriguez, Smith, and then obviously Ottavino, Lugo, Diaz. You know, Lugo does have options remaining, but he hasn't been that bad.
No, but Lugo, I mean, I think that we are nearing a nexus point with Seth Lugo, because it seems like every time they bring him back 2 days in a row or a day after, you know, get back-to-back games, he just completely can't handle it.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, in fairness to him, I think we've all kind of known that for a long time. So it's a tough thing to put him in that spot, but
sure.
But yeah, they don't have the guys to really, I don't know, put Lugo in a spot where he's pitching the way that he should be used, which is probably slightly lower leverage, maybe two innings, middle innings, or at this point lower in the batting order type opponents. And then getting a day's rest or 2 days rest and all that. And I understand that they just don't have that flexibility right now. But yeah, and I won't lose sleep over which reliever they send down, but it's just, maybe it's just recency bias, but seeing Medina do what he did last night in Cincinnati and really in the end, the fact that they scored so many runs ended up kind of being the big story of the game after they had struggled to do so. But without him, there's no way they get that opportunity to score those runs.
Right. No, absolutely not. Any other notes of note or news of note we got to discuss before we get to our music picks?
I don't think so. I think it was interesting during the broadcast last night on the Guillaume front. They noticed that he was wearing one batting glove and sort of looking at his left hand, which is glove hand, his top hand on the bat. Something to keep an eye on. He has hit a little bit worse over the last couple of weeks. Is there something going on there? I'm going to guess that it's nothing that keeps him out of any games or anything. And maybe it's just one of those things that, hey, get to the All-Star break, have a few days off, and whether it's a blister or a bruise or whatever, gives a little time to heal and reset for the second half of the season.
Yeah, I think that's probably correct. But Guillaume also seems like a guy to me who would want to play through almost anything. So hopefully yes. He is not making it worse by playing through it instead of taking a couple of days off or even hitting the IL for a short stint.
Yeah, but... yeah, well, let's hope that's the case. I mean, he has remained just an absolute treat to watch in the field.
Absolutely.
Even last night before they tied the game up and got to extra innings and won it, they turned a double play that was really nice that started with him. And just that combo of him and Lindor, man, it's a real treat to get to watch. It's fun on TV, but it makes you really want to get to games in person because I do feel like that up the middle defense is even better in real life.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, Chris, what is your music pick for this week?
So I am going to dip back into the Wilco well, and having heard the album on the day it was released, as you did, and, you know, our wives, Amazing Avenue alum Brock and his wife, we all got to hear Wilco play.
Do not forget our new friend from Solid Sound as well.
Yes. Yes. Rob, correct?
Correct.
Yes. And dedicated listener Rob, and maybe some others of you out there who were at Solid Sound and we didn't get a chance to say hello. But
if so, shame on us and shame on you. We should have made that happen.
Yeah. but they put out a record on the first day of the festival, on the Friday of Memorial Day weekend, Cruel Country, and the artwork and certainly the promotion of it are like, oh, Wilco goes country, which is kind of funny because there's always been a little bit of a sort of a country foundation.
Absolutely,
to what they've done. And to be clear, like good country foundation to what they've done. I don't know. There's probably not any other genre that the popular version of it over the last 20 years is so incredibly different from sort of what I would think of as the same genre. But it's not from start to finish. It's not too countryish of a record. But Jeff Tweedy made comments during Solid Sound, during playing it about sort of this being their take on that genre right now. So the first listen, before the festival, like any new record, it's always a sort of feeling out experience. And I liked it, and I really enjoyed it live. And now I've listened to it since then. And I feel like that's sort of a normal progression for me with any new Wilco record, is that I land on, hey, I think I really like this at a certain point in time. So it's definitely on the calmer side. I am still rooting for a heavier electric guitar, sort of almost like a electric guitar freakout record, because Nels Klein and Jeff Tweedy are both so good at doing that and soloing, and even Pat, is right up there. So yeah, anyway, a lot of the songs on this are even better live. I've always felt that way about many Wilco songs, and yeah, but you can't go wrong with it. Definitely has grown on me a lot, and just grateful to have another good Wilco record to listen to. So,
yeah,
you know, yeah. I think at some point I can challenge myself to see if I could recommend King Gizzard and Wilco records back to back and see how long I can go before another band makes it in. But
I will echo your thoughts on that. My initial reaction to the first couple of singles was a bit muted in terms of Wilco, you know, enthusiasm, but I also didn't love a couple of the Ode to Joy singles. And I will say that I think Schmilka was my least favorite Wilco record. So it had been a while since I felt like super enthused going into a Wilco record. I like Schmilka and I actually really like Ode to Joy, but I didn't think that the singles did a great job of representing sort of what that record was. But there's a couple of songs on Cruel Country, especially a couple of the ones that get a little bit more experimental that are really, really fantastic. So yeah, I echo that. My choice is as much of a 180 from that as maybe humanly possible, which is there is a comedian out there named John Daly. He is known for being the guy on Kroll Show with Nick Kroll. And his sort of only musical thing up until this point was a couple of years ago, he released a fake Red Hot Chili Peppers song called Abracadabra California or Abracalifornia, whatever it was. And it's like the most convincing fake Chili Peppers song you've ever heard. And it's fantastic. But he released an album called Ding Dong Delicious last month that is a straight up comedy record. And there's a couple of songs on there that, like, I had to pause listening to it. I was laughing so hard. I was afraid I was going to miss the lyrics of them. My favorite one, I'm not going to say the name of because it is, it's something you kind of have to experience yourself, to enjoy it. But look, I am somebody who I have, a soft spot in my heart for comedy records, but I recognize that is not for everyone. And it is not for me all the time. It is something that every now and then I will put on because it's a fun sort of, you know, thing to do. But I am not necessarily somebody who is, you know, every week jamming out to a comedy record, especially a comedy music record. Like, I think it's there's a very big difference between doing like you know, what Steve Martin would do on a comedy record versus doing like what Weird Al does on a comedy record. And that is not me judging what either of those people do. It is just one of them to me is a little bit more palpable on like a cheesiness level. Sometimes comedy music can be really, really cheesy. And, you know, there, and again, like most comedy records, there are some clunkers on this album, but for the most part, it is a really, really funny, funny record. So my rec is Ding Dong Delicious by John Daly.
Nice. Yeah, I will say that one of my favorite music videos of all time was Weird Al's video for Foil, which was
yes.
The first time I saw it, man. Oh, I was just dying. But yeah, I hear you on...
And I love Weird Al. This is, right. I am somebody, I've seen Weird Al in concert two different right. times. And I am, this is not me hating on Weird Al. I'm just saying, that, you know, it's a different type of listening experience.
Yeah. No, for sure.
Anyway, thank you all for listening. We appreciate it. Listening to this type of listening experience, which is different than both comedy albums and comedy music as well. But go to AmazingAvenue.com. We are in the middle of a big streak of Mets games, of days without a Mets off day, which is a fantastic thing. So that means there's lots to read at AmazingAvenue.com. Please go to Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram and follow Amazing Avenue. Also go to your podcatcher of choice, whether that is Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, etc., and rate, review, and subscribe to this show. You can find Chris on Twitter at Chris McShane. I am on Twitter at Brian Intinap. And until next time, let's go Mets. Thank you.